This is a Willets Point Shea Stadium bound 7 express train. The next and last stop is Willets Point Shea Stadium.
Yes, it is the Subway to Shea podcast. Anthony Rivera here with you talking about all the news and happenings surrounding that team from Queens, the New York Mets. Episode 129 from the Subway to Shea studios in my office. Thank you is in order for Kristen Nelson of the Interstate Mets Report who joined me last week. If you checked it out, you can find all their social media handles and YouTube pages in the description for that episode. If you haven't, please make sure that you do. Great episode talking about the re-signing of Adam Ottavino, getting into the bullpen, a lot of stuff coming out of that episode, so make sure you check it out. We are now about a week away from the start of spring training, and who better to have on than one of the voices of the New York Mets? You can hear him on WCBS 880 alongside Mets Hall of Famer Howie Rose. He is Mets radio play-by-play broadcaster Keith Rad. Keith, welcome to the Subway to Shea podcast. How are you, man?
Good, man. That's a pretty badass intro you have. I like it.
Oh, appreciate that so much. Let's get right into this because spring training just around the corner. Pitchers and catchers report next week, February 14th. Full squad workouts, February 19th. We just talked about it off air. Your first game will be February 24th, Saturday against, I think it's the St. Louis Cardinals.
So yes.
We'll get right into it right here. I wanted to start talk off with the Mets invitees into camp this offseason. And the Mets invited 10 players into camp. Outfielder Drew Gilbert, right-hand pitcher Dominic Hamill, left-hand pitcher Nate Lavender. You got Tomas Nito coming back, Eric Orsi, Kevin Parada, Christian Scott, Hayden Sanger, Mike Vassell, and infielder Jet Williams. You've been broadcasting with the Mets organization for a while now, especially in the minor leagues with the Brooklyn Cyclones. So you've seen some of these guys play. Who should the Mets fans be keeping a close eye on this spring?
So I say for immediate impact, the bottom of the left list, the pitchers list, Mike Vassell is probably going to be the guy to taste the majors first. He seems to be the closest one on the trajectory. And Mike's phenomenal. I liked Mike when he pitched with the Cyclones in 22. Big kid, a delivery that kind of looks like, at least just the way his body works, like Gerrit Cole. And he pitches like that. He's a bulldog mentality. He's from Boston, so he has an edge to him. And I know Mike's a competitor. Those kind of cliches actually are things. So I do like the way Mike pitches. Christian Scott, though, is another name on the rise. He might not be an April or May starter in the big leagues, but the way he flew up the system, specifically last year, really showed the Mets that he kind of found something, right-hander from Florida. So I really like Christian Scott. I know Dom Hamill's always been a nasty spin rate king, had some of the best stuff in the minors. I know Dom's biggest issue, and he'll tell you, is just throwing strikes. And if he could throw strikes, he's really nasty. So that's from the pitching side, because I do think this year in particular, you'll see the younger pitchers more than you'll see the Acuna's of the world. They're very excited to see Luis Angel when he gets up there. And then if you want to switch to the position side, I think Drew Gilbert has a pretty good chance of seeing some big league time this year.
When we go back to the pitchers, and you mentioned Scott Vassell and Hamill, do you see them more in a starting role? Could they be guys that come in up here in a relief role? I know the Mets have been signing all these interchangeable relievers and a lot of pitchers with options, but you know, the way the rotation is now and the way the bullpen is now, it could be possible that we might see them either as a reliever or starter, or do you just see them as starters coming up?
Well, they have starter pedigree. I think they're going to be starters. But what interests me about now David Stearns running the Mets is I kind of went back and looked at a couple of blueprints of the Brewers and how he used those pitchers, because I'm just kind of interested in how he turned that team into an 85-90 win team every year. And if you look at his teams, he'll have a six-man rotation most of the time. And specifically two guys, Corbin Burnes and Brandon Woodruff, they were minor league starters. They came up as kind of piggybackers. They'd come out of the bullpen in relief. They'd get a taste of it for a year or two, and then they'd be full-fledged starters. And now we know who Corbin Burnes and Brandon Woodruff are, pretty much household names in baseball. So I am interested in seeing if that's maybe a way to get the taste in these guys' mouth to get them comfortable. Because one little wrinkle that's gone on in the last few weeks with David Stearns is you can tell he wants young players to you know, play well and play a lot in the majors. But there's always been, from my time in the major in the minor leagues with the Cyclones and with the Mets organization, it's very difficult. So young players feel there's enormous amount of pressure to perform right away at the big league level when now those shoes are too big to fill, kind of thing. And so I think that maybe you'll see some relief pitching for those guys if that's the way Stearns ran it in Milwaukee. He might do that in the big leagues here with the Mets.
Now, I know you mentioned Drew Gilbert, and I don't know how much you got to see of him in the minor leagues since he only recently got traded in that Verlander deal, but I don't know if you saw him as a visiting player. There's been a lot of talk about him coming up. He had a great little portion when he got, you know, sent over to the Mets. And, you know, my concern with the outfield, it seems like there's more depth this year to the Mets outfield, but by no means is any of those guys feel like they're set in stone, except for Brandon Nimmo. Obviously, Harrison Bader will probably play most of center field if he can stay healthy. You have the whole situation with Starling Marte. We don't know where he's at right now. So I don't know if it's maybe through injury or through great play from Drew Gilbert, but you know, I got to agree with you. I think that we may see, you know, Drew Gilbert at some time, whether it's a September call up or at the trade deadline. I really do feel like Drew Gilbert is probably the, you know, most position player that we may see come up this year.
Yeah, the reason I say that is because I think the Mets love the complete package of the offensive and defensive, mostly capabilities that he has. And you have to be able to do both. I mean, look at what Brett Beatty has done and Mark Vientos. And you can say, hey, you know, their bat kind of got them to the big leagues. Their defense is leaving a little bit to be desired. A guy like Drew Gilbert, though, the Mets so far feel like offensively and defensively, he has kind of enough to get there, because it's hard enough once you get there to kind of figure out playing in New York. But it's interesting. Again, Nimmo, it looks like he's going to play left field. And I just want to reiterate for Mets fans, that doesn't mean the Mets like him any less. He's one of the best offensive players in baseball. Harrison Bader just happens to be a better, metrically better center fielder than Brandon Nimmo. But Brandon Nimmo is going to be one of the best left fielders in baseball. But with Bader on a one-year deal, that's exactly what Stearns and the Mets had in mind, I think. Okay, we'll give Harrison Bader a year. We'll see if Drew Gilbert's ready. If he's not, maybe we'll re-sign Harrison Bader or see how that works out. But that's what Stearns did with the roster construction, is we have guys that we expect in the future to fill X, Y, and Z spots. We've filled those spots at the big league level with one-year deals, and it's perfect, kind of placeholders for the future.
And I like that Stearns has kind of stuck to his guns. He wanted run prevention, and by bringing in Bader, putting him in center field, you get the best out of him. And, you know, I feel like Nimmo is one of those players where he just wants to play, and he'll do whatever he can to help this team out. And having him in left field, I think you got a good mix there. And then, you know, we'll see what happens with Starling Marte. I'm you know, hoping that he's 100% and ready to go in the outfield. Now, I look at the bullpen, and a lot of talk last year, while there was so much shuffling with the relievers, is, you know, will they bring up a guy like Nate Lavender? There was a lot of talk about him coming up, and I don't know if I see it this season with all the names that have been signed. I feel like he would have to like blow this team away to bring him up here. What are your thoughts on Nate Lavender?
Yeah, I like Nate. I think Nate's an underdog candidate for a guy to make the big leagues, but as Buck Showalter once told me, the greatest thing in life you could be is a lefty. So Nate Lavender has that going for him. And you know, what's unique about this bullpen now that in the last, how many hours, 72 hours, Jake Diekman is now a Met and Shintaro Fujinami is now a Met. And this bullpen starts to look really, really good. So that makes it tougher on guys like Nate Lavender, who's a lefty. I know last year he was probably really, really close. I know that certain people with the Mets really liked him. And I don't know if he was a phone call away, but when you're in AAA, you're a phone call away. You know, on paper, if you look at Nate Lavender, he doesn't throw overly hard. He's not going to blow you away with his stuff, but he's effective. And he was effective last year in spring training, which is the best place to be effective, right in front of all the decision makers. You know, we'll see. you need a lot of people. You're going to need a lot of relief pitchers. People are going to go down. People are going to get hurt. And Nate Lavender, as a lefty in AAA, that helps his case for being a potential call-up in 24.
Stearns definitely promised depth, and he's given depth to the bullpen, whether, you know, it's by strength of their arm or the stuff that they have. He likes the arm slots, the potential. Everything is there for these guys, and I feel a lot better about this bullpen now than I did maybe about a month ago, even with the re-signing of Adam out of Vino, who I like, and I think that was the right move to bring him back. He knows New York. He loves New York. He wants to play here, and I thought he pitched very well, even last year to a certain extent. I know he struggled in some big game moments, but besides that, I mean, he had a pretty decent season. When you got a 3.21 ERA in the bullpen that the Mets, you know, had unfortunately last season, it was nice to see the Mets give him another shot at coming back here. And you mentioned Jake Diekman, you mentioned Shintaro Fujinami, and I always love when the Mets bring in multiple left-handers. I feel like that's been missing for a couple of years. I know they tried it with Chasen Shreve and Joely Rodriguez and that didn't work out, but with Jake Diekman to go along with Brooks Raley, I really like the way they have shaped this bullpen. And if you look at Diekman's stats and you look at Shintaro Fujinami, Diekman in 2023 was 0-2 with a 3.34 ERA at 64 strikeouts in 56 and two-thirds innings pitch. Fujinami in 2023, his rookie season, 7-8 was 7.18 ERA, two saves, 83 strikeouts in 79 innings pitch. I think what people forget about Fujinami is that in Oakland, he started 7 games as well, so his ERA is a little bit skewed that way. But what I like about both these pitchers is that, you know, they started off in one team struggling, the Chicago White Sox. For Diekman, he had a 7.94 ERA, goes to Tampa Bay, who they seem to do wonders with these bullpen pitchers, and he had a 2.18 ERA when he moved there. In Oakland, Fujinami had an 8.57 ERA, and then in Baltimore, got it down to 4.85. What did you think of these two signings following the return of Adam Ottavino last week?
Yeah, so Ottavino, I'm first of all with you on him. I mean, you know, relievers are so year by year with their results. And even though it might not have been his favorite year in the world, it was still a fairly effective year for Adam Ottavino. He knows that his bugaboo is holding runners on. And hopefully he's just a very smart guy. He'll figure out a way to quell those stolen bases this year. Now, Diekman, I've loved Diekman for a long time. I just, you know, lefty specialist who's kind of always every July at the trade deadline, he's on the move somewhere because he's going to go somewhere and help. And I do know, I kind of heard through the grapevine that the Rays had seen Jake Diekman might have been tipping his pitches last year with the White Sox and thought, we'll figure it out. We'll help him out and we'll work our Tampa Bay Ray magic. And that's exactly what they did. So, you know, anything that Tampa Bay teaches you, it's not like you're going to forget it when you leave. So I love the addition of Jake Diekman. And then Fujinami was kind of my dark horse candidate. You know, everyone's talking about, you know, Hader and Wandy Peralta and who should the Mets sign. I remember when the Mets faced the A's last year, Fujinami started against the Mets. And then in Baltimore, he came out of the bullpen and he threw 103. And when you talk about relievers, I know that you put the numbers up and those certainly tell the story, but a lot of teams just look at the stuff. What does the stuff do? Is the guy nasty? What sets him apart? And you can't teach 103. So I think the Mets are hoping that they get Fujinami in their system. They have a new pitching lab that they're working on. Jeremy Hefner has been the whisperer in certain spots. He has been able to withstand a couple of managerial changes because he is pretty good at what he does. Can the Mets get their arms around Fujinami and control that 103-mile-an-hour fastball? Because he does walk a lot of guys. That's been his issue in his 1 year in the majors, in his first year coming over from Japan. So I think the stuff is there. And like you said, you try to compile a bullpen with different looks. The Mets have kind of had the same look. Guys that maybe don't throw overly hard at a right-handers. Let's see what you could do with lefties or guys who are right-handed that throw 100. There wasn't enough of that last year, especially with Edwin Diaz out. Now you have Diaz, Fujinami, Diekman. You have options and you have mini depth. Say X, Y, and Z pitcher. Ottavino's out tonight. He pitched back-to-back days. Same with Diaz. You feel good about some of the options that you have on those nights where certain guys might be down.
The bullpen seems to be shaping up. It's not flashy, with big names and big signings, but David Stearns has been known for building these successful bullpens, and he did it very well in Milwaukee. And you got, you know, Diaz, Raleigh, Ottavino headlining the back end of the bullpen, Jorge Lopez, Fujinami, Diekman, Phil Bickford, Drew Smith, and you could probably add Michael Tonkin. That's kind of what I'm thinking that this bullpen is going to look like come the beginning of the season. And I'm ready to go to battle with them. I think that this could be a seriously good bullpen. We saw a little bit from Phil Bickford towards the end of the season. I kind of like what I was seeing from him. Drew Smith is always the one that I'm worrying about because he has seemed to struggle with giving up the long ball. And I'm a little concerned if he can't get himself back on track, because I always thought of Drew Smith as that guy who could take over and possibly be a setup man and possibly close some games. What do you think that Drew Smith has to work on to kind of get himself back on track? Because he's a talented reliever, and it's just frustrating when you see him struggle so much.
Yeah, I mean, I like Drew Smith. I like his stuff. I don't know. I don't know what that it factor is in those seventh or eighth innings that you need that affect your effectiveness, basically. And I remember it was a weird year for him last year. I know he was healthy, which was the number one thing for him. But I think he hit relievers, they give you 7 out of 10 good outings, and that's a good thing for them. So I think I caught him once in the dugout, and I said, what's going on? You found something? And he said, yeah, I've been working on some things, and I think I figured it out. And the next time out was against the Yankees, and he got pinched for, you know, sticky stuff, and he got suspended. So, you know, did he find it out? Did he just start going back to spider tap? I don't know the answer to that 100%, but I still think he was searching a little bit, and that's frustrating because he has such a big arm and you just want him to succeed. Every time he takes the mound, you kind of want him to succeed, and he does as well. But when you have depth like that, you don't maybe need to have him pitch the seventh inning. He could pitch the fifth or the sixth and get you to some of those bigger names. And maybe as those big outings start to, you know, get put together, he becomes confident in himself again that seventh and eighth inning. Because again, he has great stuff.
And yeah, that whole run that he had at the beginning of 2022, right before he got hit, I think it was he got hit in the finger. I don't know if he dislocated his finger, but I remember him getting hit in the finger. That whole run that he had where he was kind of shut down, I hope that we get to see that again, because that was a nice little run for him, and I want to see more sustained success for Drew Smith. Now let's move to the rotation. The Mets rotation is set to be headlined by Kodai Senga. Joining him, obviously, the returning Jose Quintana, along with the newly acquired Luis Severino, Sean Manaea, and Adrian Hauser. Depth-wise, Tyler McGill's there. You got Jose Budo, David Peterson, who'll be coming back a little mid-season, Joey Lucchesi. Then we talked about the kids on the way, Christian Scott, Dom Hamill, and Mike Vasquez. I thought the rotation last year was the Mets' undoing. As much as you can talk about the bullpen, if you're not having your starting pitchers go 5-6 innings, it's not going to work. This year's rotation, I definitely think will be better, but how much better can they be depends on what.
To be honest, going 5, just somebody, for the love of God, go 5, which was kind of what, you know, Howie and I were yelling there for the first 2 months of the year, because that really was it. And it didn't feel like it. And Edwin Diaz went down, so everybody in the bullpen got moved, yes, but starters didn't get out of the fourth inning. I mean, I remember the Joey Lucchesi start. It was also my birthday, so that's why I remember it. It was April of last year in San Francisco. Joey Lucchesi went 7. It was like, wow, nobody's done this all year. And it was Joey Lucchesi of all the big names that
was the
did
best
that.
Start of the year.
Absolutely.
That was the best start of the year.
Absolutely. And you just felt that wasn't there. I mean, Scherzer was a shell of himself. The slider was getting crushed. Verlander wasn't healthy. Senga, we didn't really know what we had with Kodai Senga yet. And then Peterson and McGill just didn't, you know, Buck used the word all the time, graduate. Didn't, you know, play up to a certain level that you expect after some success and definitely some experience. So I think just going 5. And to be honest, if you look at this rotation that has been compiled, it's not super sexy, like most people can agree with. But we talked about how good that bullpen is. If you go 5, if you go 6, and you keep the Mets in the game and you go to the bullpen, maybe that could be the deciding factor to winning that day's game. Solid defense, good bullpen, and the Mets offense, which gets totally forgotten about through all this conversation. The Mets offense can be pretty good with the guys that they have, their core. But yes, go 5. Somebody please just go 5.
Well, let's talk about the Mets lineup since you brought it up. It seems set outside of the addition of a DH. It seems like this lineup is pretty much, you know, set. And the baby Mets are, as termed by Francisco Lindor, are going to get a huge opportunity as Stearns evaluates this roster this season. Who has the most to prove of the three, Francisco Alvarez, Brett Beatty, and Mark Vientos?
So I think Alvarez, we really know what he can do. I have the utmost confidence in him. I have since the minor leagues. I really have the same kind of feeling about Brett Beatty, but I was very surprised at how Brett on the field handled himself last year, especially defensively. I was a little bit surprised that he had kind of looked a little shell-shocked at some turns. I never forget that pop-up. What was that? Max Muncy that hit for the Dodgers that was like a weird vortex in the air that Beatty just ended up diving for, and it fell in, and it just didn't look pretty. And to me, that was like, man, this kid's really going through it right now, unlike I've ever seen before in the minors. So I think, you know, Mark Vientos too, kind of positionless right now. If Mark hits, he's good. He's in. He's in the lineup. If he doesn't hit, he doesn't play. And that's kind of the name of the game for everybody. But so I think of the three, probably Brett Beatty. This is a very big year for him. And I've seen him in the minor leagues look like at times the best natural hitter ever. I just didn't see that enough last year. Maybe we could spread his wings this year and figure it out. But you could tell that the defense started to affect the offense, and then the whole thing kind of unraveled.
I think that, you know, Met fans have to remember too that these kids, they don't have full seasons worth of at-bats. Vientos definitely doesn't, and I don't think Beatty does either. So it's going to take time with them. And something that I've seen, you know, Mark Vientos kind of looks destined to be the DH, but we've seen him work on his defense this offseason with Francisco Lindor and coming into camp a little earlier. Actually, I think I saw a video the other day of him taking grounders down there in Port St. Lucie. A lot of talk has been about Beatty being the lead for third base job, but could Mark Vientos kind of leave camp at spring training and be the third baseman?
To be honest, that would be very surprising. I think that's a bit of a pipe dream. I know Mark would love to do that. I think Mark just wants to play every day, and Mark wants to hit every day because that's what he does really, really well. He could be the great option that the Mets went with him at DH, and he checked every box, is, you know, posted a solid slash line, great OPS. He hits his way through this season. If Mark Vientos is the future at third base, I just don't know if he's proven that enough. I'm not going to say the Mets have given up on him defensively. I just think that he might get 20 games at third, if that. I just don't think he's the third baseman of the future like a Brett Beatty would be. But again, if nobody hits, it doesn't matter. Mark Vientos hits, everybody will love him. He'll do just fine.
And he could possibly spell Pete Alonso at first at some points in the game, too. I mean, he could be practicing defense there as well when Pete needs a day off, or maybe just that Pete needs to have a DH day. So we could possibly see that as well. And speaking of Pete, I think about Pete a lot because this is the final year. It could possibly be the final year that we see him in Mets uniform. I was kind of hoping for a contract extension this year, but I don't, outside of maybe one last minute thing like he did with Francisco Lindor a couple years ago, I don't know if we'll see that happen. He might test the waters in free agency, kind of like what Brandon Nimmo did. And I would like to see in this final year of this contract, can we get some legit protection, you know, for Pete, you know, with the roster as currently constructed? How do you see, you know, the lineup 1 through 9 shaping out, and who gives Pete the best at bats, you know, being behind him? What gets him the best pitches? Which person in that lineup?
Yeah, I think if Starling Marte is healthy, he's a good option for maybe a 5 or a 6 spot. I think Francisco Alvarez is going to live a lot right there in that 5 spot. I think that's a perfect place for him to protect Pete. You know, it's interesting. I like to study sabermetrics and analytics, and, you know, a lot of times, you know, protection in the lineup, it's fake, it's made up. He's either a good hitter or he's not. Well, if you watch the Mets in August and September, there was nobody behind Pete in the lineup, and so he'd either be walked, which is a great thing that happens, but then the guy behind him, there'd be nothing there, or Pete would, you know, stretch. He'd strike out because he's trying to make something happen where it's not there. So protection is actually a very big deal. And again, if you write down the Mets lineup 1 through 9, you start to find out, well, where do I put Jeff McNeil? Where do I put, you know, Starling Marte if they're healthy? Where do I put Alvarez? It's a very top heavy Mets lineup. And that's a good thing. It kind of all hinges on Marte's health. And, you know, Pete's going to be Pete. And I'm very interested to see what kind of walk year that he has. It's an attitude year. It's a testament year. He will, at the end of the year, potentially hold up exactly the check number that he wants because he deserved it at the end of the year. Not that what he has done already shouldn't count, but I'm saying this could be his massive monster year that you hope for. And maybe he could find his payday with the New York Mets. But protection is big. And, you know, you mentioned it earlier. If Starling Marte is healthy, changes a lot, makes the lineup deeper, makes it strong again, because Marte was, I don't even know if a shell of himself is the right way of saying it. He was, I don't even know what we saw last year. And I know he was surprised. If they get him back, you've got plenty of protection.
Yeah, between the double groin surgery that I don't think he had fully healed from. And then there was one play where I think he was sliding into third and then he hit his head and that kind of, I guess that triggered something. And he just wasn't the same after that. It was definitely some form of shell of himself. It's crazy to think that with Pete, all the home runs he's hit and how well he's played without protection, how much even better he could possibly be if there was someone that had his back in the line. I'm not saying that no one does, but, you know, some legit power threat behind him to help him out. And I'm hoping that, like you said, Francisco Alvarez is that guy. If he could bring his average up a little bit, if he could take more pitches, I think Francisco Alvarez would be perfect for that position. We might be a little ways away from that. Then maybe they'll try it, because I know they're always shaking up the lineup. And I hope that we see that. Once again, I'm here with one half of the Mets radio broadcast team on WCBS 880, and that's Keith Rad. You can follow him on social media at Keith Rad. Keith, I'm a producer at heart, so I have to ask you about the business. Now, us Met fans, throughout the team's existence, have been blessed with the best broadcast teams on TV and radio. And I'm a radio guy through and through. I produce radio. I love listening to audio. You have the opportunity to do both. Which one do you enjoy more?
You're talking about TV versus radio?
Yeah.
Oh, radio, 100,000,000%. Radio, to me, they're two different, it sounds conceited, but it's not. They're two different art forms, basically. Two different muscles to flex. TV is one different beast, and radio is another. I love the ability to paint the picture. I love the ability to, you know, if you go back and listen to I've been listening in the off season to some old, you know, Bob Murphy, Ralph Kiner, Lindsey Nelson games, just as I'm walking my daughter around the neighborhood. And it dawns on me 5 minutes in, hey, I see everything, and they're just saying these words. They're creating this reality for me. The way they describe this, the way they describe that, the words that they use, their inflection, the sound of the crowd in the background, those things that create this almost imaginary game that's really happening. That's what I love the most. It's the most intimate form of broadcasting. I mean, TV is great. There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen with TV. You've got, of course, the Gary, Keith, and Ron, but you've got producers, directors, graphics people. A lot of people want to get replays in, or this on the air or that on the air. Let's go down this rabbit hole of statistics or stories. And on radio, it's just you and the listener. You're at the game. The listener's not there. You're literally just telling them what's going on. That's all it is. But the way you do it is so different. The styles are unique. No two are the same. And that's what I love most about being able to do that now at the major league level.
You talked about painting the picture, kind of telling the story. Did that transition come easy to you when you switched over?
It's more difficult on radio. And I remember when I first started, people would tell me, if you can handle a baseball game on the radio, you can do any other broadcast out there. Because on radio in baseball, there's so much dead time. And again, this is before, you know, the pitch clock. Even though there's the pitch clock now, there's still a pretty good chunk of dead time that you have to fill. You have to fill when it's 3-2, it's a tight game in the eighth. And when it's 18-0 in the first inning, you've got to figure it out and keep it edgy for nine innings. Keep it fun. So that challenge, once you can kind of check that box, everything else becomes a little bit of a step down, a little easier in quotes. It's very hard still. But the point is that it's certainly one of the more challenging forms of doing this baseball on radio, because you have so much dead time. And I love that, because if I'm bored and I'm going, what am I even talking about right now? This is boring. I know the listener is bored. And so that constant attention keeps me going and keeps me trying to keep it entertaining.
Now, working with Howie, how do you know not to step on each other's foot on a call, or you know, when something has happened, how do you know not to step like over each other?
Yeah, it takes some time. And I remember Howie would always say last year, you know, it's got to be organic the way way we learn how each other's cadences are, what our pacing is. When we complete a big call, a double down the line that scores a run, the Mets take the lead, do we let it breathe for a second? When does he finish? When do I finish? When should I jump in? And it's a dance. It's a little bit of a tap dance to try to figure out the right timing. And the ones that when you listen and it's seamless, you don't even notice any of that, they've got it down perfectly. A lot of that just takes a little practice. And, you know, when you're doing games alone in the minor leagues, you can't really practice that because you're just by yourself. So it's a lot of the other games that I would do. TV is also big for that as well, working with a partner. A lot of people, when you send them your demo, they want to hear you by yourself. They want to hear you working with a partner. When do you step on someone's toes? When do you not? I'm a big fan of letting it breathe, especially when I want to hear the crowd or I want to hear the beer vendor shouting in the background, just to let people feel the game a little bit. And, you know, Howie doesn't step on my toes. He'll jump right in when he wants to jump in. And I had to learn with him, hey, now's the time. Okay, all right, don't say anything. This, he's doing his thing. But again, it's a dance. And if I work with Gary Cullen or Keith Hernandez or Ron Darling or Pat McCarthy, everybody's got a different way of doing it. So you just have to be a listener and know when your time is coming.
Keith, I cannot end this conversation without talking about Broadcast Bites. will that be making a return this season?
Yeah, I've had a love-hate relationship with Broadcast Bites because Broadcast Bites is my Instagram account that I love to eat. It's my favorite thing. I've done it 3 times a day, sometimes more, for my entire life. And I love exploring new places. Pat is my guy on the road when the Mets are in Chicago or Cincinnati or wherever. We're going to get XYZ food and I will post all about it. And Broadcast Bites is taking on a life of its own. Problem is that, you know, I don't post the salads. And sometimes when you eat too many of those good meals, you need a salad here and there to trim it back. But it's going to make a reappearance very soon, because now that we're in some nice places, better than some of these minor league towns that all they have is a Subway and a McDonald's, start to post some of that better food. But I appreciate you shouting out Broadcast Bites.
Yeah. Miss Subway to Shea and I plan to visit all the baseball stadiums at some point. What is the one recommendation for food you can give that we have to try?
Talk about in stadium, best thing to try. Boy, that has put me on the spot right now, because there's always something
it could be
find.
Out of stadium too. It could be around the stadium, someplace to go to.
Yeah. To be honest, San Diego was, I mean, burrito taco city. I mean, I had burritos, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I can get you the name of some of the places that I think I posted here or there, but man, the hardest thing in life is when, especially with food, you have an amazing recommendation, expectations are at an all-time high. You take your first bite and you go, they're okay, because the expectations were sky high. But the burritos in San Diego, expectations sky high, and it nailed it. It rose to the occasion. So I'm very excited to go back again, because my expectations are now sky high.
We have a 20-game membership and we went to, I think, everywhere. I think that's the most I've eaten at Citi Field in my life last year. Our top three meals were the chicken donut sandwich at Jacob's Pickles, Mark Murphy's porchetta sandwich, and the East Shore lobster roll at the Lobster Shack. What are some of your favorites at Citi Field?
Yeah, I usually would tell people the Jacob's Pickles donut chicken for sure. Now, again, you have to remember, I don't have a 20-game plan. I have a 162 game plan. So like I said, you can't always post every, you know, chicken fingers and fries every single night. But I know that there's a food truck in right field that changes, or sometimes out in center field that changes every couple months. And I usually go out there, a little taste of Queens. But really the other thing too is I'll sneak I think it's the Smoke Shack from Shake Shack, a little spice, a little kick. I know that's not, you know, Shake Shack is phenomenal, but it's not like the blow your socks off. It's just crushes it every time. That's probably my go-to. But again, I can't eat that every single night.
Yeah, it's crazy. I love Shake Shack. That's my like favorite, you know, kind of fast foodie burger. But I have one where I live. And to now get it at Citi Field, it's just like there's so many other things to try, so many other things to eat. And, you know, I tend up going elsewhere. Keith, I can't thank you enough for joining me on the Subway to Shea podcast today. Is there anything you're working on or that we should know to watch out for?
No, I just make sure you're listening to WCBS 880 and the Odyssey app. You'd be happy to know that most of the time in New York or New Jersey or in the geolocation around New York City. You can listen to the games for free on the app. You don't need the radio. You don't need the MLB app. It's all basically free to listen to on the app. So we're excited. And for those who are hanging on and enjoying this roster construction and are excited for 2024, excited to take the ride with you. So I appreciate you having me on, Anthony. And you can tag Broadcast Bites as well on Instagram.
Anybody that wants to do that will. Absolutely. Absolutely. Broadcast Bites will be tagged in this because you can't go to a baseball game and not have some good food. So Keith, thanks again. And I hope that we could do this one more time.
Thanks, man.
I appreciate you. All right. That was Keith Rad, one half of the Mets radio play-by-play broadcast team alongside Mets Hall of Famer Howie Rose. Like you said, catch them on WCBS 880 starting Saturday, February 24th, as the Mets take on the St. Louis Cardinals in Port St. Lucie at 1:10 p.m. That is the spring training opener. Make sure you do that. And make sure to follow Subway to Shea on X, Instagram, and TikTok at Subway to Shea. Listen to the Subway to Shea podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Watch on YouTube. Hit that subscribe, follow button to turn on your notifications and never miss an episode of Subway to Shea. Please rate the show, leave comments. And if on YouTube, make sure you give a thumbs up. It really helps my content get out there and notice for all to see. And I would really appreciate that. With that said, thank you for tuning in and helping my podcast grow each and every week. This podcast is yours as much as it is mine. You continue to be a very major part of the success of Subway to Shea brand, and I appreciate every one of you. So for Anthony Rivera, this is the Subway to Shea podcast. Always remember, let's go Mets.